What Jesus' life teaches humanity of its divinity? What Jesus' life teaches humanity of its divinity? This is the seminar, The Story of Jesus, from the campus, the University of Healing here, with Lecture 2, What Jesus' Life Teaches Humanity of Its Divinity. Jesus' life was a very simple life, and we are taking an overview of the life right now, and it's a very simple life, it's a very wonderful life, telling all about how it is living as a human being from its divine sources, from its divine reality. And this is very important for all of us to think about. What is it that's important for us in our life, in our world, when we are thinking about the life of Jesus? If Jesus were such a cool cat, and he were living in this dimension, in this time, in this space, how would he be living? Would he be living with his seamless robe? Would he be living with 12 men? Would he be living with a mother who didn't understand him, and a father who had no interest in him? Would he be living in a culture of being raised and brought up into an understanding of the magnificence that he was? Or would he have to do it all alone? Now, we know from our own experiences there are hundreds of people in life who have had to do it themselves. They have come up out of difficult circumstances. They have come up without parents. They've come up with parents who were of absolutely no benefit to them. And they had to do many things themselves. Now, Jesus did and didn't do this. He came up in what might be considered an ordinary family, with brothers and sisters and a mother and a father, a home and life. But what was it that he was doing most of his life? What sort of things was Jesus doing most of his life? He was doing the intellectual, inside, intuitive, listening within awareness self. Now, let's just ignore his education for the moment. That'll come later. And let's talk about what Jesus' life teaches humanity of its divinity. Was he an obedient son? We are told that he is. Was he a person who believed who he was and knew who he was? We are told that he did. Why were we told these things, that he was obedient and that he was a good son? Because that's what a good Hebrew is. That's what a good Jew is, you know. Supposed to be, at least. And they live according to these principles and live according to these ideals. But how do you think he was with his playmates? Playmates? Jesus had playmates? Sure. How do you think he was with his brothers and sisters and his friends that he knew? How do you think he was? Do you think that he was a know-it-all? That he was out there telling them everything and telling them how smart he was and what a genius he was? No. He lived his life so beautifully, so perfectly, so soundly, that everyone who came into his consciousness said, hey, that's a nice kid. That's a nice person. We know a lot of people like that. We know a lot of, not, I should not say that. We know some people like that, not a lot of them, who are really nice kids, who have principles, who stand up for those principles, who don't make other kids feel bad when you stand up for your principles, who don't make other people feel bad because they're doing their things which are different from yours, and it could be called, quote, naughty, but you don't make them feel bad. You don't have any feeling about it at all. What you have a feeling about is what is right for you. Now, this is the aspect that Jesus had. He had the aspect of what was right for him. And Ellen, I think it'd be a good idea if you took him into the garage, freed him, and gave him a bowl of water in the garage. because after the wonderful dry meal that he ate, leave that there, unhook the other part. Just take him in the garage and give him a bowl of water and leave him in the garage, okay? He'll be happy to go with you. So, when we're talking about Jesus as a young man or as a person, as a child, what kind of a child was he? Was he the kind of child that we'd like our children to play with? Or was he so advanced, and was he so expecting of all the other children to be like he was, that the other parents might not like their children to be around him? You know? Now, there are a lot of children who are very brilliant and very alert and very wonderful, and a lot of parents don't want their children to play with those kids because of many things. Because they will start aspiring to be that way themselves. How did Jesus live his humanity to express his divinity? Well, he lived his humanity in ways that we teach. He said, "I like me." Jesus said, "I like me." Certainly. Do you think he liked himself? Certainly. You think he didn't like himself? No. He liked himself. Do you think that he enjoyed his own company? Sure. Do you think he liked to have time alone to meditate and be quiet by himself? Sure he did. He thoroughly enjoyed that. Do you think he liked to go on walks and meditate and do things that pleased him? You bet he did. You know kids in your world like that. You know these terrible, naughty kids who disappear and nobody knows where they are. They're doing something bad. You know, they really aren't. The kids disappear. And when you ask them where they were, I was out in the woods. What were you doing? Just walking around, looking and meditating and thinking. The kid doesn't say meditating because that's not a word they use. But I was just having fun. What were you doing? I was just looking at the flowers. And what were you doing looking at the flowers? Now, a mother usually isn't that persistent, you know. But if the kid answered, I was talking to the flowers. Talking to the flowers? Now look, son, that's going to get you in trouble, acting like that. But I was talking to the flowers and telling them how beautiful they are and how much I appreciated the love and the beauty that they had and the fragrance. My goodness, some of the flowers are just fabulous. They're wonderful. And so you see, what's going on? What's going on? The parents have a tendency to think that the child who is off on his own inner path is doing something wrong. And because of that, the children think maybe they should be doing something wrong. Maybe they should be doing something that's bad. I know you did something bad. I know you did it. I know you did something bad. I know you did something bad. I know you did something bad. And pretty soon the kid says, hey, if I'm going to get blamed for it, might as well do it. I don't know anything bad, but maybe I can learn from the other kids. Because I know they do a lot of dumb things. But, you see, when you're living your divinity, when you're living as a human being and living your divinity, you don't need to prove yourself to anybody. And no matter what questions people ask you about what you're doing, you don't have an answer for them that satisfies them, but you have an answer for them. They say, what were you doing in the woods? Well, I thought it'd be fun to take off all my clothes and run naked through the woods and just feel the breeze through my body and just feel the sand in my toes and go down into the creek and float in the water and just, you know, my naked body and me. Oh, that's terrible. Oh, that's terrible. No, that's pure. That's divine. That's great. But we say it's terrible because we think that there are ulterior motives that are being expressed there. And there are not. There are not. They're just being themselves and having fun. Now, how would you ever see a child being human and expressing his divinity? Well, the other boys and girls like to tie a can on the tail of a cat, you know, and watch the cat run around with a can tied to its tail and try to get it loose. And this kid, he says, hey, let's see if we can learn the language of the cat. What? Yeah. And we're intelligent human beings. We have an intelligence about us that should be able to teach us how to speak to cats. Now, let's learn if we can speak to cats. Now, I got a couple cats. They're kind of fun. And so, what's the first thing you have to do when you speak to a cat? Anybody? You get down on their level. You get wherever they are. You lay on the ground with them, or you set them up on the table, and you sit there and you talk right to them. But get down on their level so that they're free to come and go if they wish. They're not forced to be there. And then you say, "Hey, cats, I'm new at this sort of communication. Can you help me a little bit? How can I talk to you? I'd like to talk to you because I think that you have some beautiful ideas to express, some beautiful thoughts, and I'd like to know about them." And so, little by little, you have an intuitive awareness of the cat talking to you. And so, little by little, you learn how to do it. Little by little, the cat communicates with you. Now, many of us have pets. We have dogs and cats. And we sit in our chair, and the dog jumps up on our lap, even if it's 85 pounds, like I'm a Rex by a beautiful golden retriever. And he thinks he's a lap dog. And that's good. And so, when he's there, I say, "Rex, you are gorgeous. Rex, you are beautiful." And he looks up at me with those eyes saying, "You're very wise, you know." And as I talk to him, he communicates with me. And when I say, "Rex, just relax now," he lays his head down and just hangs it over the edge of the chair and just relaxes and goes to sleep if necessary, whatever. But I talk to him. And today, I talk to him for a few minutes, but normally I talk to him for a few minutes at night before I go to bed. And I tell him how much I love him. And I say, "Rex, what was the fun thing you did today? What was the most fun thing that you did today?" And he doesn't have to think very long. He has to merely figure out a way of communicating what was fun to him to me. And I say, "Rex, don't make it so tough. Just think it. And I will tune into your thought. And you tune into my thought, too." And so I tune into his thought, and I listen. And you know what he says? "The most fun thing for me today was to be with you." That's nice. "The most fun thing for me today was to walk with you on the leash." Having no leash at all and running around the 104 acres, that's a lot of fun too. But the most fun thing was to walk with you. Now, do I know that for a fact? You bet I do. Does Rex say that to me? You bet he does. You see, these are the type of things that Jesus would be doing to show his humanity. And he would be called an idiot. Because if Jesus were to talk with animals, people say, "Hey, that's crazy." Yet in a circus, the circus trainer, he trains his animals and he talks to them. And when you're working with the Sea World, and you're working with the seals, and you're working with the porpoises and whales, even whales, yeah. And riding on top of the whale, standing there, these trainers, they do all these things. Oh, it's true. But how do you train a whale to do what you want it to do? How do you train a whale to like you, to listen to you, to believe in you? You believe in yourself. And this is what Jesus did. He believed in himself. So Jesus could speak to all the stones, and he could say, "I am the pure white light of love. I surround myself with peace and pleasantness. And wherever I go, the path is open before me." And he's not saying, "There's not a stone there to stub my toe on. There's not an obstacle." He doesn't say the stupid stuff like that. He just said, "And my way is open before me." Was his way open before him? You bet it was. When he laid down to sleep on the desert, do you think that he had a blanket?
No.
Do you think that it was cold at night?
No.
Do you think he was cold?
No.
Why was he not cold? He told his body it is warm. He is master of his body. He didn't care about, he didn't say, "Now the air that's around me is nice and cozy warm. The air that's around me is wonderful." He didn't say that. He said, "My body is warm." My body is comfortable. They're saying, Herb, you're just making these things up. No. No! I'm listening to my divine within me. How would my divine talk about it? However my divine would talk to me, that's how Jesus' divines talk to him. You understand?
Yes.
It's that simple. I mean, there's not a divine for Jesus and a divine for me. There's not an infinite wisdom for somebody else and a lesser wisdom for me. It's just, how have I trained myself to tune into it? Now, how did Jesus tune in to the divine about him? How did he express the divine that he was? How did he do that? He did that in one simple way. Sylvia, pick up that piece of paper lying next to you. Pick it up. Oh, Sylvia, there is your pencil. Sylvia said, I know I have a pencil sitting on the floor next to me here. I know it's there. She picked up the paper. I could see the pencil. She couldn't see the pencil because her knee was in the way. And then she put the paper back down again and covered the pencil. And then she looked around for the pencil. Now, if Sylvia had just stopped and said, pencil, you are an inanimate object, but you have life in you, and you and I are one. Pencil, where the hell are you? And the pencil would have said, Sylvia, lift up your knee and look, here I am. And it would have talked to her. Did Jesus say the rocks could talk, the hills could talk? If anything needed to have a protestation or support of anything, the hills and the rocks would speak out? Herb, why did you say hell? It gets your attention, doesn't it? Now, what is hell about? What is hell about? What's the devil about? It's all in our thought. Now, are you living in hell right now? Are you living in the devil's land right now? Are you living in where you're not in control? Hell is where you're not in control. The devil is where something else is in control other than you. Now, Jesus at all times was in control because he trained himself that way. You see, the wonderful thing about Jesus is that nobody knew more than he did. And nobody knew more than he did because that's the way he created it. He created it himself in a modest family, in a family of people who they didn't have great intellectualism about them. They were not stupid, but they just did not have great intellectualism about them. And so he could just be himself and have fun. Now, do you think that his brothers and sisters played games with him like hide and seek and things like that? Surely they did. Now, when everyone would hide and Jesus had to seek them, do you think he knew where they were? He just says, okay, divine in me, where the heck are those guys? And the divine in him says, well, now, Joe's over here, and Mary's over here, and Peter's over here, and da-da-da. And so he said, okay, Mary, you're behind the bush. Peter, you're behind the tree. And Joe, you're lying down underneath the cover over there. You're trying to hide. Come on out. And he knew. Now, was he so brazen like that? But it could have been, couldn't he? And do some children do that? Yes, they do. Because some children are intuitive. They're tuned in. Now, I've heard of that word. I know about intuitive. Well, so did Jesus. Jesus' life was intuitive. Your life can be intuitive. Oh, I'm a psychic. I'm sensitive to these things. I know these things. Well, big deal. You're supposed to know these things. You're supposed to be in tune with your divine self. You're supposed to be in tune with all the knowledge of the universe that is your choice to know. That's why Jesus knew it. He is not some freak of nature or freak of spirit, you might say. He is a normal expression of all that is good and beautiful. Now, if I ask you, are you a normal expression of all that is good and beautiful? You say, oh, I wish, I wish, I wish. Stop it. Say, I am. Say, I am. I am intuitive. Let's say it together. I am intuitive. Again. I am intuitive. Again. I am intuitive. Now, the more you say these things, the more you are. I'm intuitive. I'm intuitive. I'm intuitive. Now, why not? I like me. Do you think Jesus walked around saying, I like me? You bet he did. Did he walk around looking at the birds and the bees and the chestnut trees? They didn't have chestnut trees in his area, I think. But do you think he walked around and said to all of life everywhere, hey, hi guys, I like me. I like you too, you know. This is a wonderful world we live in. Oh my goodness, isn't it wonderful? What's new with you guys, huh? Had any interesting experiences with people walking around here? Hey, I got a couple minutes. Can I sit with you guys? I would like to have you tell me a story. What's this all about, Jesus? Well, you've been here all day. And you've been here for days and days. Now, I understand that the caravans oftentimes stop here because you're in an oasis. And I'd like to hear the stories that these caravan people tell. So, tell me some of their stories. And so, the bushes, the trees, the palm trees, the water in the oasis, start to sing the song of what these people say as they went along. And Jesus knew all that. Do you think he needed television or radio? Do you think he needed a telephone? Do you think he needed even a cellular phone like we have? How great it is we have the cellular phone. His cellular phone had no charge and no limit on the amount you could talk, you know. And isn't that nice? No, that's the kind we should have. Now you say, well, we don't know that he didn't have that or that he did have it. Yes, we do. Was Jesus in communication with the divine within him? Yes. Was Jesus in communication with his mother and father and sisters and brothers and whatever at all times? Was he aware of everything going on in his life, just as though it were right here? Can you do that? Can I do that? Do we do that a lot? And do we doubt ourselves? Yeah. We doubt ourselves. We say, my God, how could I know that? And then some of you silly ones, you come along and you say, now, give me an evidence of having done this. Let me know that you came to visit me by moving something in my room and then calling me later and saying, I moved your chair from one side of the room to the other, or I tipped it upside down. Oh, is that why the chair was tipped upside down? I thought it was the earthquake that I had earlier tonight. Ah, you know, I don't believe that was you that turned that chair upside down. I don't believe it, you know. And the communication is zilch, gone. It is turned off because we are not being believing beings. We have within us, just like Jesus has within him, the ability to communicate, the ability to be aware, the ability to teleport, the ability to do anything. Now I tell you, just like Jesus knew, that when I want to be at the pyramid, and I go there occasionally, quite often in fact, and when I want to be there, poof, I'm there. And you say, well, you're still in bed. Well, how many bodies do you think I have? How many bodies do you have? You have only this one body we see here? You have hundreds of bodies that you're having all sorts of fun with, you know? And you're doing all sorts of things. Now, Gertrude, she says, well, I got to be home for the kids for Christmas. Well, go ahead, stay home for the kids. It's nighttime there. I'm here when it's daytime there with the kids. And then have your fun with the kids on their Christmas trip. And then, pop, be here as soon as we're ready for our program. And then, in between this, Gertrude, if you don't want to walk over to the Citadel, just see yourself there. And if it's time for lunch and you got 2 seconds to go, pop, you're there. You don't have to be late at any time. In fact, if you're sitting on the potty and you have to be over there, you can just say, I am done, I'm clean, I'm ready, I'm gone, you know. Or, Gertrude, you could be in many places at the same time. Do you think that Jesus had just one body? Do you think you have just one body? you have an infinite number of bodies. Did Jesus say all is one?
Yes.
And did he say that ask and you shall receive no matter what it is?
Yep.
However silly or idiotic it may be, ask and you shall receive, because it's already done.
Yep.
Now, how could Jesus or God or whomever make a silly, open-ended statement like that, which is so open to misunderstanding, you understand? And know that it cannot be misunderstood? Because everything that was ever thought, everything that was ever said, everything that was ever done, is done. And you're not doing something new. But the thing is, it's new to you. Merely because you're not tuned in to your universal beingness. Now, Jesus was the universal man. And he was saying, you too can be the universal man. Do you think that Jesus flew in a helicopter, or that he, don't go saying no now, or that he flew in a jet going to a spacecraft going off to Mars or something like that? Sure, he did all those things. Did he need that to go there?
No.
Did you ever go to the planet of unconditional love?
Yeah.
When you were at the planet of unconditional love, did you see what it looked like there? Interesting, wasn't it? Did I ever take you inside of the sun?
Yes.
And was it a glorious journey?
Yes.
And was it acceptable? Did you feel comfortable about it?
Yes.
Well, Jesus does this all the time. He lives yet. And where does he live? He lives in the now. Why is it that we worship him? Why is it that we are get so hung up with Jesus the man? Because we would so much like to do that ourselves. And we feel, you know how the saying is, can I touch you? Can I rub off on you a little bit of your Mr. Gates billionaire, you know? I shook hands with Mr. Gates, you know, and he's a billionaire, and I shook hands with Warren Buffett, you know, and I shook hands with the president, you know, and I did these things. Maybe the president will rub off of me and I could be the president, you know. Well, you are the president. You are Bill Gates. You are Warren Buffett. You are the wealthy and the great. You are them. And if you want to have their name, you have their name. Do you think that Bill Gates is just tied up in the body that he appears to have? No way. Where does Bill Gates go to get his information on writing his beautiful software? He goes to his divine source. Where did Jesus go to go get his information on the Sermon on the Mount? Wasn't that a cool sermon? He went right within himself. And he knew the right things to say, and he knew how to say it, and he knew how to stagecraft it too, you know? I mean, we'll talk about this a little more when we come to it, but just think. How many people did he speak to? 5,000, wasn't it? And 5,000 people on the hillside, you know? They must have had acoustics beyond belief. Or did it matter? Did it matter what kind of acoustics that he had, and did it rather matter that he was one as each person he spoke to? Yeah? How would it be if I sat one-on-one talking with you and having a nice conversation, and you could hear me and I could hear you, just like we're sitting right next to each other? You would say, best way to have it. That's the way he had it when he spoke to the multitudes wherever he spoke. How do I know that? Because they didn't have microphones in those days. They didn't have speaker systems in those days. They had no way of communicating. He had to do that. 5,000 people out there on a hillside with perhaps a breeze blowing a little bit, you know? How did he do that? Magic. Oh, that's the word, magic, you know. No. He just was one as each person he spoke. Can you do that? Can you be one as each person you speak to wherever you are speaking, and have them all instantly understand you and instantly know you and instantly feel confidence in you? the wonderful thing. It's what each of us can do and do when we believe in ourselves. Now, Jesus did not rest on his laurels. He constantly put the cause in motion. He constantly said, I am whole and perfect. He constantly said, I am God. I am the creator of my world. I am the allness and the allness. He constantly said these things. You understand? He constantly said them. And because he constantly said them, he kept himself, his pump primed, he kept himself in harmony with all knowledge and all information. Now, this is true. This is true. I don't want to protest it to you, but I want you to really see that it is true. It's illogical. It's unreasonable. How did he feed the 5,000 with the fish, you know, and the loaves? We hear the story, and it's really just a couple of crumbs and little scraps of fish. And how did he do that? He probably just said to each one of them mentally, right now you are filled to capacity. You are no longer hungry. Not no longer hungry, you are filled. And you feel very content. And when the food comes to you, you're going to say, oh, I don't want any. So it's easily going to go around to the 5,000, you know. And the kids may not be listening. And they'll reach in and grab something to eat. But that could be. And it could also be that the basket never got empty. You know? And there's no reason why the basket could never got empty, either mentally or physically. There's no reason why the basket could not have always remained full. Have you seen The Bishop's Wife? It's a very lovely movie. And in the movie, the professor has his bottle of wine, and he offers some wine to his friends. And the bottle never gets empty, because the angel is standing there and saying, and the bottle keeps filling up, and with good wine, and he keeps drinking it, and he doesn't get drunk. And he says, this is amazing. And it went on for days. You know, afterwards, and this is a lovely thing. This is a lovely thing. Now, did the professor not believe? He believed. He says, wow, I've always got a full bottle of wine. That's wonderful. He believed that. And it was so. It was so, but he also believed. Now, if he didn't believe it, what would happen? He'd probably bust the bottle or some other silly thing, or the bottle wouldn't be full. Now, Jesus believed in that intuitive self of himself, and he believed and knew what was right for him, and he followed that, and he lived it. Now, you can do that too. You can follow it, and live it, and believe it, and be the wonderful being that you are, the wonderful creative source that you are. You can do anything you want, but you have to make the decision. Are you going to go out chasing after cars and elevators and telephones and radios and stuff to communicate with? Or are you going to listen to the divine within you? What are you going to do? It's up to you, totally. Just whatever you want to do, no matter what it is, no matter how outrageous it may be, this is how Jesus did it. This is how Jesus did it. Now, Jesus did it in a lot of simple ways. He did it in a lot of simple ways, but no one was surprised when he did it. His disciples were not surprised. When he raised from the dead, when he raised from the sick, when he raised these people, no one was surprised, because Jesus did what? He said of the dead, He said of the dead, you're only sleeping. He said of the sick, you're whole and perfect. Yeah. Now, what do we do? What do we do? We brilliant geniuses. Hey, they're dead. Bury them. You know? And what do some cultures do? You put a coin over their eye, you know. What do you put a coin over their eye for? There's a symbolism to that. And that way you always can see right through the coin. Yeah. So why is it that sick people are always told to lie down? That way they'll be sick longer. And what does a doctor say to a woman who's just given birth to a baby? Get up and walk around. Get up now. Years ago, oh, you must have bed rest. You must, and the pioneer woman, we'd always look at the pioneer woman. Here, they have the baby while they're out in the field, and then they put the baby in the thing and put it on their back, and then they go on with their work in the field. You know, yeah. My God, how can they do that? Well, they called it survival. But they also called it, they never thought they couldn't do it, because that was what they were taught. They were a workhorse, and they would just keep on working. They're not supposed to not work. That's what they believed. And so that's what they did. Now, what do you do? What do you believe about yourself? Are you able to experience wholeness at all times? Are you able to experience the feeling of being healthy and wealthy and wise at all times? It's up to you. You have to make that decision for yourself. And if you don't make that decision for yourself, what are you going to do? If you don't make that decision for yourself, you're going to have a lot of unhappiness. Now, how did Jesus handle all of these things? We can say, well, was you there, Charlie? Were you there? Did you know about it? And the answer is yes. How can I tell you about the things that Jesus did? Because all time is now. And I am right with him right now, and you are right with me with him right now, and having that experience. Neat, huh? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, I want you to tell me, are the things I'm saying true?
Yes.
Yes. Do you see Jesus? Do you see him doing the things we're talking about? Now, when you can say yes, and see it, then you get the great benefit. But because you can't say yes, because you haven't opened your inner eye. Lydia, is your heart pumping?
I know it is.
You know it is, but is your heart pumping?
Yes.
But you can't see it.
No.
It's hidden inside your chest. You can't see it. What makes you think you're so intelligent that you know your heart's pumping when you can't see it?
I know it.
You know it. You were told it. But you see, we have a lot of experiences that go on in our life that we cannot see and we know is taking place. Do you know that your food is digesting and going out the other end when it's done? Sure. Do you know that your eyes can see things? And when you close your eyes, you can still see things? Yeah. See, when you close your eyes, well, you see. Right now I can see all of you sitting there because that's the last picture I had in my eyes. Now, can you see? Yes, you can. We are in a miracle world, in a miracle age, in a miracle expression all the time. And we are coming aware of that. Jesus knew it. Now, he knew it because he lived it and he believed it. Do you think that Jesus spent time working in his father's carpenter shop? And the answer is no. Why would he bother? Why would he bother spending time in his father's carpenter shop, which he may never have been, had a carpenter shop, but why would he spend time doing that when he could go out and sit and meditate? He could go out and listen to the divine within him, telling him all the things that were of interest to him. He could go out and just have himself a ball. Why would he go and sit and work inside? Now, you know, all Jesus would have to do would be this here. Tongue hanging out. And his father wouldn't expect him to work in the shop, would he? Would he? Well, now, if it's so simple not to work in the shop, why not have it be an acceptable, simple thing not to work in the shop? Can that work too?
Yeah.
What would be an acceptable, simple thing not to work in the shop? Hey, Dad, you're hurting for business. If I speak my word and I say, you have lots of business, you have lots of people coming to you wanting to make, you know, wood things for them. If I can say that for you, and it works, can I go off and meditate for a couple of weeks? Well, sure, son, you do that. You can go for a month, you know. And so then he does it. And the work just flows in the door. Hey, son, you can't go. I need your help. Dad, if I tell you that all the work is done now, may I go? Oh, sure. You say all the work is done now. You can go. Dad, go in the shop. So Dad goes in the shop. He says, why aren't you guys working? Well, it's all done, sir, you know. You are fast. You are really fast. So then he comes out, and Jesus said, may I go now? What do you mean, go now? You didn't do that. That just happened, you know. And so what happens when he does that once or twice? Pretty soon, he's not given the gift anymore. Joseph is not given the gift of having these things done. You see, we, because of our non-belief, we lose the opportunity to do many things. It's not that it's taken away from us. It's not that it's taken away. It's just that we lose sight of it. We lose the ability to perceive it, to observe it. We lose that ability, and that's very foolish. Now, how can we gain the ability to see it? How can we gain the ability to know it and enjoy it? How do we do that? Well, we do that very simply. We do that by recognizing that all is known now. All is known now. Now, do you think Jesus would have said those things to his father? Nah. All Jesus said to his father was, Dad, have a good day. I'm going to go out and meditate. Go right ahead, son. He created his father wanting him to do what he wanted to do. Do you understand that?
Yeah.
He didn't have to go and create business for him. He didn't have to create the work being done. He didn't have to do all these things which have other repercussions to them that are not necessarily harmonious. Because then the father would depend on Jesus to make sure he had business, you know. And then to make sure that the business got all done and stuff like that. And Jesus didn't want any part of that. So he would just say, Dad, see you. Where are you going, son? Oh, I'm going to go off and meditate in the desert for a week or a month. Well, son, remember one thing. I love you. Go and have a good time. Thanks, Dad. That means a lot to me. Thanks a lot, you know. Now, can you create your father saying that to you? Can you create your world appreciating what you're doing? And you create your world realizing what is right for you and good for you. Can you do that? Sure you can. Do you do that? Yeah, unfortunately. And the reason you don't do it is because you believe that something can go wrong. What a silly thing to do. What a silly thing to do. Now, Gertrude, are you whole and perfect?
Yes.
What happened when Jesus said, I'm whole and perfect? Huh? What happened when Jesus said, I'm home? When Jesus said, I'm home, he never had to say that. He said, I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. He didn't say I'm home perfect, because to say I'm home perfect means that you weren't perhaps at some point. And my goodness, Herb, you're taking away our positive statements. You're taking away these wonderful things that we've learned to depend on. And that's good. I'm not taking them away. I'm merely shaking up your bottle. I'm shaking up your bundle of ideas. And if it works, now, you may say to some person, like my son when he was injured, I said, mark your home perfect, mark your home perfect, mark your... I had no idea what it was, but I thought something needed to be done. And, of course, he was home perfect. Now, I just wrap Mark in my pure white light of love, and I see all his ways are peace, all his paths are pleasantness, and he is independently wealthy and good other good stuff. But I do that for all of you. Every morning as I walk the path here, I include all of you. And I must confess, I am like Jesus, you know. I must confess. First I say, me. Then I say, Rex. And then Button and Love come in there and the cats. And then I say, my staff here and all of you guys. Then I say, Mark and his family. And then I say, who else do I say? Ray, May, and May, Marie, and Ray, and Howie. And then I say, God Unlimited. Oh, no, then I say, everybody on the prayer treatment list. But, of course, you guys have come in there already. Everybody on the prayer treatment list. And then all our students, all our ministers, all our practitioners, and all our churches. And then I go on. God Unlimited, University of Healing, University of Philosophy, Absolute Monastery, School of the Master, Order of Absolute, Worldwide Healing Ministry, and on and on and on. And I cover all these things. Now, do I need to do that? Can I just snap my finger and cover it all? Yes. But why do I cover each one? Because each time I mention your name, the word about you, you are illumined. You are uplifted. You are just transposed. And that's kind of nice. That's kind of... Why is it that Jesus spoke his word? The centurion said, my servant is ill. Can you speak your word for him? Jesus said, sure, I'll be right along. No, no, you don't have to come. Just speak your word for him, and I will speak my word, and because I am the command, he will follow what I tell him to do. You see? Now, is Jesus listening to us right now? Are we listening to Jesus right now? If we were listening to Jesus, what would he be saying right now? You guys got the message. You're cool, you know, right? Or would he say, it is done unto thou according to thine belief, you know, sorry, you know, real old English sort of stuff. And it is all in the now. It is all in the current present tense. It is all in this right now, now, now. And isn't it interesting how at breakfast we were talking about Richard Bach and his books. And we thought one of his books was Now. And it turned out to be One. And hey, that's okay. That's okay, but isn't that interesting? One. Where are you? What is your thinking? What is your attitude for yourself? You're fantastic. I'm so proud of you guys. I'm so happy with you guys. I'm so thrilled to think that you are listening to the story of Jesus and realizing that you are Jesus, realizing that everything he did you can do and do. And you don't have to wait. You don't have to wait until another time. It's right now. Right now. And you're beautiful. Yes, you're fantastic, and I love you very much. So, we shall see you in my love. I love you, I love you, I love you.
Love you.
So.